Ask Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off Duration and SuperDeck products May 17th through the 20th. That means 30% off our most popular color family, blue. Psychologists have found it to be soothing and relaxing, which makes it especially great for bedrooms and bathrooms. And of course, get 30% off all of our other colors. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
MSW Media.
They might be giants have been on the road for too long.
Too long.
And they might be giants aren't even sorry.
Not even sorry.
And audiences like the shows too much.
Too much.
And now they might be giants are playing their breakthrough album, Flood.
All of it.
And they still have time for other songs.
They're fooling around.
Who can stop They Might Be Giants and their liberal rock agenda?
Who?
No one. This ad was paid for with somebody else's money.
Of law is not just some lawyer's turn of phrase. It is the very foundation of our democracy. The essence of the rule of law is that like cases are treated alike. That there not be one rule for Democrats and another for Republicans, one rule for the powerful, another for the powerless, one rule for the rich and another for the poor, or different rules depending upon one's race or ethnicity. To serve as Attorney General at this critical time is a calling I am honored and eager to answer.
So yeah, now it's clean up on aisle 45 time. And for a long while yet, it is going to be clean up on aisle 45.
Everyone, welcome to episode 53 of Clean Up on Aisle 45. It's Wednesday, January 19th, one day before my birthday,
woo!
2022. I'm your co-host, Allison Gill, and with me per use is my co-host, Andrew Torres. What's up, Andrew?
Well, I was having a good day, and then it got so much better. And now, knowing tomorrow's your birthday, I mean, that's the cherry on top. So I'm fantastic. How are you?
Ah, I'm wonderful. I'm wonderful. Yep, going to be, 48? Something like that? Something like that.
Woo! Yeah.
Way too old for Matt Gaetz.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. That's good, though. You know? Mm-hmm. You're an actual grown-up, so. Anyway, it is always a pleasure to be here. And of course, we want to thank our new patrons. So a big thank you to GL, to Joe Ponin, to Handmade of Dobbs Hypatia, to Proud Dad of LGBTQ Plus Kid. Hey, that's great. And I'm glad you're sharing that. To Katari Sparong, www.saltprairie.photography, Jordan Gamney, T. Gaddy Anton Roberts, Logan is my favorite X-File. I might be mixing up a couple properties there, but I'm with you. Ken Malski, and I won an argument in the YouTube comments, and all I got was the total collapse of democracy. Yep.
Yeah. And also thanks to Peter Kirowak, Jacob from Sweden, Maddie, Jason Cart, OK Google, I Know This Is a Simulation, You Can Let Me Out Now, Robert Pixley, Heather L. Sullivan, Cindy Abawi, who can't believe she hasn't done this already. It is the most important podcast I listen to. Thank you. T. Pygar and Nick Zachariasen, creator of Metal World, the tabletop RPG with a volcano made of dragons.
Thank you so much. You know, you literally make the show possible. So last Friday, we had a patron-only hangout. Plus, you know, every week you get the ad-free version of the show, all sorts of goodies. So if you'd like a shout-out like this one on the show and all that good bonus stuff, head on over to patreon.com/aisle45pod. That's AISLE45POD. And sign up for as little as a buck an episode.
And now, on with the show. this is a little block we like to call a sedition story. So this story broke late last week, but Merrick Garland's DOJ announced the unsealing of a D.C. federal grand jury indictment charging 11 criminal defendants, and most notably, Oath Keepers, President Elmer Stuart Rhodes III, with seditious conspiracy. This is, I underestimated Garland in this case for a change. Of those 11, 9 are superseding indictments against a bunch of seditious losers who were previously charged with conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding, right? 18 U.S. Code 1512C2.
Yep.
2, that Rhodes and Edward Vallejo were charged for the first time. And now, these are the first seditious conspiracy charges in connection with the 1-6 sedition and insurrection. But we suspect not the last.
Yeah, so much to unpack here. So Rhodes, who looks like a bad cosplay of the David Hasselhoff version of Nick Fury. And if you don't get that, Google it, please. It's
I've been calling him Traitor Sloth is what I've been calling him.
Oh, my gosh. It really is. I look just like the Hoff. Anyway, fewer teeth, though. But he has long been on the DOJ's radar, right? So this is the first indictment, but this is the guy who was described in numerous previous indictments as person one, right? One of the coordinators of the 1-6 insurrection who was in, quote, regular contact with the insurrectionists on the ground and arranged to amass guns and distribute them to a so-called quick reaction force team. There were actually two of these teams inside the Capitol. When I say quick reaction force, I mean a bunch of loser wannabes who think they're in goddamn G.I. Joe, right? So you have Kelly Meggs, codename Gator One, Jessica Watkins, codename Cap, Joseph Hackett, a.k.a. Ahab, Joshua James, codename Hydro. I think he's the one whose motorcycle transforms into a submarine.
No, right? He drinks his own urine.
Oh, yeah. And I almost feel bad for David Morchel, whose codename is Hatsy. I guess he wears a hat. I don't know.
It's like Carter Page's code name.
I'm just looking around. You're like, yeah, it was a hat. Are you just assigning code names based on the first thing you see? No, Cherry. AJ, you're a veteran. What was your secret code? Yeah,
Lamp, right? I love Lamp. Yeah. No, I didn't have, just Petty Officer Gill. I didn't have a code name.
Oh. All right.
Look, not everyone can get an A-level code name like Hatsy. The other newly added defendant, Edward Vallejo, was the other leader of one of those QRF, Quick Reaction Force teams you just described. So again, remember, these people, Rhodes and Vallejo, stayed outside D.C. at a Comfort Inn in Boston, Virginia, and then quickly distributed guns once the Capitol had been breached. So no, Uncle Frank, these weren't just a bunch of tourists. They weren't just patriots set up by Antifa and BLM. This was a well-coordinated effort to breach the Capitol and then bring in guns to stop Congress from certifying the election. And anyone who's making up excuses, who's defending that, is literally not a believer in democracy.
Yeah. And now we can say that that is not only our view, but the view of the United States Department of Justice as well, because these, like you said, Allison, are the first indictments handed down under 18 U.S.C. 2384, that is seditious conspiracy, which makes it a crime if two or more persons conspire to overthrow, put down, or destroy by force the government of the United States, or by force to prevent, hinder, or delay the execution of any law of the United States.
Yeah, and that sounds like what everyone involved with 1-6 was doing. Yeah. But as we know, this is the first time the charge has been sought by the Department of Justice. On our Patreon-only hangout Friday, you gave a quick reaction for us, that said this was an infrequently brought offense because of potential First Amendment and vagueness claims, and you've had a chance to research and think about it. What do you think about that hot take?
I'm going to say, B to B plus, right? So the statute isn't cited very often, or at least I didn't think it was. then I went on to Westlaw and I found 179 cases. However, as soon as I dug into it, like 175 of those are pro se plaintiff's actions brought by literally insane sovereign citizen types that get, sort of instantly dismissed. So apparently this is one of those things like, prepare your own UCC 2-503 form that some nutball sovereign citizen group is like, you can sue the judge who totally gave you a parking ticket for insurrection against the true sovereign. I don't know. But anyway, they all get dismissed. Nestled in there are a handful of cases, including a recent one, right, 2020, against Masood Khan and other Muslim Americans who were students at Northern Virginia Community College.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And if I recall correctly, in that case, the students all got together to listen to Mullah Omar's call for all Muslims to help defend the Taliban on September 16th, 2001. This is 5 days after 9/11. The agreed upon evidence was that the group planned to travel to Pakistan to meet up with a group called Laskar-e-Taiba, or L-E-T, to get military training, right?
Yep.
Now, even though L-E-T, or LET, was a primary group focused on defeating India's influence in Kashmir, the evidence was that any fighting in Afghanistan would be against the United States forces, and that any fighting in defense of the Taliban would be against United States troops. And here's the key fact, Khan never made it to Afghanistan, never actually fired against U.S. troops.
Yeah, that is exactly right. So remember that conspiracy is, one, an agreement among two or more persons, two, to by force or hinder the execution of any law of the United States, with three, at least one overt act by any member of the conspiracy. So like the Khan case, you don't have to actually succeed in your ultimate goal, right? That didn't happen here. And also, like Khan, you don't have to be present at the site of the planned crime. So this really does seem like a pretty solid fit for Rhodes, Vallejo, and their co-conspirators.
But what about the vagueness argument, which is what, you know, for months I was like, you know, it might not be seditious conspiracy. It might just be obstructing an official proceeding. And then they can tie that to Trump, who, you know, if he incited it, then he was also obstructing an official proceeding. And I was like, it's easier to prove. It carries the same maximum sentence. It just doesn't have the pizzazz, you know, that seditious conspiracy has. But what about that vagueness argument?
Yeah, that actually came up in the Khan case, right? So those defendants got a new trial because of a 2018 Supreme Court case called Sessions versus DiMaia, right? And here's how we unpack that. In DiMaia, the Supreme Court said that the Armed Career Criminal Act, which had a definition of crime of violence, was unconstitutionally vague. That definition was any other offense that is a felony and that by its nature involves a substantial risk that physical force against the person or property of another may be used in the course of committing the offense. And that does sound kind of vague. And the successful argument that was made at the Supreme Court level was you couldn't figure out in advance what kind of a crime, quote, by its nature would risk violence, right? Like that's an individual decision. So for that and for other constitutional reasons, the inquiry in the future was you had to look to the conduct of the defendants themselves, right? You can't say you're doing the kind of thing that risks offense. You have to say, no, the stuff that you're doing risks violence. Yeah.
Okay. So in Khan's case, the problem wasn't with the 2384 charge itself. It was whether the 2384 conviction constituted a, quote, crime of violence under another whole statute.
Yep.
And because the way 2384 conviction was secured, there wasn't enough evidence relating to Khan's individual conduct. Not like here, right? So Khan and his co-conspirators vacated their other convictions and got new trials, but not on that not on that seditious conspiracy charge.
Yeah, that is exactly right. So here's the key takeaway. I have read that the last 2384 conviction was nearly 30 years ago. I don't know the first person to say that, but that's now being repeated in all of the follow-up articles. And that was related to the plot to blow up the UN, right? That's just not true. Khan's 2384 conviction was never overturned. This is an area where the press just has it wrong. And I can understand that because you've got to read through all these cases and they're not lawyers. So the important thing is, I don't think that DiMaia argument on vagueness applies to the plain text of 2384. And I will point out in support of my reading that Khan's lawyers didn't try to make that argument, right? So I'll say this, other than proving conspiracy generally having, you know, being a challenging crime to prove, I don't think that seditious conspiracy is going to be materially more difficult, despite the fact that this is an infrequently used statute. So I commend Merrick Garland, the DOJ, in bringing these charges.
Yeah, I was quite surprised. So one of the things that you do have to do in winning a conspiracy case, right, is prove agreement. Mm-hmm. So that's not just the intent to commit the crime, but the assent of all the members of the conspiracy to all do the crime you want done. Now, ordinarily, that's, like you said, difficult. That's a heavy lift. But here, the indictment gives a strong indication the Department of Justice has all the text messages and other communication it needs to prove that element of this allegation. And those include encrypted signal messages, which never works, criminals. Right. It never works. As I have not seen like all the best indictments have all the WhatsApp and signal messages.
Yeah. What? I'm not supposed to take screenshots of those?
As well as details. But yeah, this is something called the cloud. As well as, speaking of the cloud, they got 16 of Rudy's phones after January 6th, too. But, you know, those signal messages, as well as details about go-to-meeting calls, right? So it's pretty obvious the DOJ has a cooperating witness.
Yeah, yeah. I think that Reed is exactly correct. Now, so far, in the few days follow-up, Rhodes's public stance has been defiant, which is, you know, the thing you'd expect from the guy playing Army Man in front of his fellow cosplayers, right? His initial hearing is, of course, scheduled for tomorrow, right? The day after this show airs. So we'll get to see if the judge orders him held without bail or not. Rhodes's lawyers make the arguments that he is not a flight risk and has no priors. The counterargument is you ordered and organized a military pipeline to ship firearms into insurrectionists who breached the Capitol. So, you know, we'll see who wins.
Well, they remanded him until the hearing. Yes. So I personally think, though, I don't think this guy's going to see the outside of a prison for a long time.
I hope you're right.
Unless he cooperates, you know. But against
who? And who knows, once he's behind closed doors and, you know, Viper and Hydro and Hatsy. All of your, you know, and Hatsy. I've always loved you the most, Hatsy. Like, once they can't see what you're doing, I mean, you know, I don't want to say people who play dress up flip the fastest, but you know.
Yeah. And as I understand it, seditious conspiracy carries a maximum sentence of 20 years in prison, fines up to, what, to 20,000, 200,000, something like that. What's the likely prison time for a first-time offender and also veteran, military veteran? Does that matter in sentencing?
So the military veteran part doesn't matter, right, in either way that you're thinking, right? Like, it doesn't mean that he's going to get less. It doesn't mean that he's going to get more, which he should for, you know, abusing, right? For taking the lessons that we provided to him at taxpayer expense and, you know, unleashing it on his private little, force of cosplayers. And I also want to tell you, due to the infrequency of this, there is no, usually what I do is you go to the index of the sentencing guideline, like 630 pages long, and you look up the specific statute and you say, oh, 18 USC 2384, and it's listed there. And then you go to the section, it tells you what the baseline offense level is. There isn't one.
It just says, see the judge.
Yeah, it says, just come talk to me after class. So there will be an argument as to where to start. But I will tell you that Khan, first-time offender, got 120 months. That's 10 years for his seditious conspiracy charge. So that's a level 30 to 31 after upwards adjustments. This is very, very serious. And again, lots of other charges. I mean, part of the reason you charge this in addition with conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding is because the charges can stack, right? So
yeah. And I think it's really, really interesting to look at around the same time, we got a multiple count indictment on the Three Percenters, and we got a multiple count indictment on the Proud Boys. And you know, I was reading the Three Percenters one. There's a person one mentioned. Mm-hmm. There's conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding. There's all the, you know, they haven't added, or they don't have the, you know, tampering with evidence like this one does. But I wouldn't be surprised if we, you know, if they have an Oath Keeper, if they have a Three Percenter cooperating, if this indictment doesn't, it looks like the original Oath Keeper's indictment, it might turn into a seditious conspiracy indictment.
I think that take is 100% correct. And again, it shows, I mean, I, I'm glad we're getting to walk our listeners through this in real time. Like all of our listeners, we've said this in multiple episodes. I wish we could have done it a bit more quickly. but this is the way the system is supposed to work, right? Like, you procure indictments, you work your way up the chain. When you get cooperating witnesses, it allows you to go back and issue superseding indictments and fill those out and go, okay, now, right, Hydro gave us all of his secret, you know, WhatsApp messages and Signal and told us about the go-to meeting. And now, right, we can put in and say we are prepared to prove beyond a reasonable doubt, right, that's as you must in a criminal case, the following elements, including, yeah, how are we going to prove you guys all agreed to it? Well, you know, we're going to put Hydro on the stand and he's going to be like, yeah, no, we chatted every day. Every single one of us knew exactly what it meant, because the defense, right, is going to be a First Amendment defense. They're going to say, look, some of the elements in the indictment are taken from our public web pages. We said, you know, that the government is illegitimate. Well, you know, we can show you, you know, 500 lefty websites that say the government is illegitimate. And you can't, right? Opining that Donald Trump or opining that Joe Biden is not the valid president of the United States is a constitutionally protected political opinion that you can have. Mm-hmm. Saying Joe Biden is not the constitutionally elected president of the United States, and let's get together the suitcases of the guns and the strike force and go stop the Senate from confirming him, is a very, right, you've now moved beyond expressing,
free speech, yeah.
You know, a Jacobin Mag article and, you know, you've moved to seditious conspiracy, but that's the defense that if Rhodes remains defiant, he will go to trial saying, yeah, well, it's my right to believe that this government is illegitimate, and it is his right to believe that. It's just not his right to supply his cosplayers with guns to go stop the Congress from certifying.
Yeah, Matt Gaetz has every right to think a 17-year-old is hot. But once he... Sorry, I just can't. Can't today with that asshole. I can't. I think we're going to see more seditious conspiracy charges. And I feel like this is a contained investigation. I don't think it goes all the way up yet. I think there are other probably investigations like... That would catch that. This, it just doesn't feel like a one huge pyramid.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like we've got the 7-state false electors conspiracy thing. You know, that whole conspiracy. We've the Pence thing, you know, with the coup and the Eastman and Clark and the 7 states and the fake electors. And now Sidney Powell is caught up in that because 27 of those fake electors who signed their names to those fake certifications were plaintiffs in Kraken lawsuits.
Yep.
And she's being investigated by Merrick Garland's Department of Justice out of D.C. in the U.S. Attorney's Office. There's a special grand jury impaneled. It's headed up by Molly Gaston. She's doing all of the 1-6 politically charged things like Bannon and Meadows and Powell. And so there's just no way in my head that they, if they're investigating Powell and her financing and where that money went, if she funded this 7-state conspiracy, she's fucked.
I think that's right. And, you know, we talked about this a little bit on the last opening arguments. I want to emphasize, if you haven't heard that, the reason that we have those 50 odd people is because of a public watchdog group that served a FOIA request on NARA, on the National Archives records, right? That said,
oh,
hey,
actually, I mean, I think it was on the states.
Oh, well, that overlaps. But what we also have,
or both, okay, yeah,
on OA is we have, and again, it's just, it's 50 plus pages long. It's really, really short. You can read it in an afternoon. We linked it on our show notes. And what happened was Watchdog Group asked National Archives, said, hey, can you turn over any slates of electors other than the ones that you've published on your website? And the National Archives was like, sure, here you go. And it is right at, we like I said, we went through this in just a couple of minutes, but it says, we, the undersigned, duly appointed electors of the states of Arizona, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, right, New Mexico, all of the seven states that we're talking about, you know, do hereby certify that we met and we all voted for Donald Trump. We joked about that as being, you know, you're signing your name, you know, to your confession to committing perjury, which you are, right? Like you have said, I hereby attest that I was the duly appointed elector. When you know
is that not. Is that perjury?
Yes, 100%. When you take an official document signed, many of these are notarized, right? Signed under penalty of perjury, and you submit it to the National Archives that says, hey, we're the real electors. What's our authority? We met in a Waffle House in Pennsylvania, right? That absolutely is perjury. And I picked out a couple of names from that list, which were folks that I just recognized who were big players, right? Because most of these people were diehard operatives in Republican Party politics, including current and past chairs of state Republican mm-hmm. parties in Arizona and Wisconsin. And so this is the reason I'm harping on this is because I think it shows how you, any individual listener to this show, can make a difference, right? We have tens of thousands of people listen to every single show. And it's a way of kind of crowdsourcing out there and go, hey, oh, hey, I know that asshole. And so the more information we're able to bring to light, right, that the more we're able to help out. So I felt really warm and empowering. And hopefully, as you're listening to the show, I know we cover a lot of awful, terrible, desperate things, but this is an area where somebody trying to break a story managed to break more than just a story. They managed to get documents that are going to be used by the DOJ and maybe help bring down this web. And gosh, if they can bring down Sidney Powell along with it, then you know what a contribution that made.
Yeah, and if the Mueller probe is anything to gauge any timelines off of, that Sidney Powell probe has been going on for about mm-hmm. four and a half months.
Yep.
And that would mean if it was on the same timeline that indictments, if they have enough to charge, would start dropping probably next month.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
And that's if it only started in September. That's just the only evidence we have as far as it goes back. It could go back further. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. After this break, we'll be back with a robust comings and goings that you don't want to miss. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello. I'm Jeff Stein.
And I'm Jean Meserve. Together, we host the Spy Talk podcast.
Every week, we delve into the worlds of intelligence, foreign policy, military operations, and the intersection of all three in national security issues.
Spycraft, cybersecurity, violent extremism, whether at home or abroad, technology's impact on intelligence gathering. We cover it all and much more.
We interview former spooks, military officers, government officials, journalists, and national security researchers, leveraging our backgrounds in military intelligence and homeland security, along with our decades of experience as journalists and news organizations like Newsweek, The Washington Post, and CNN.
So join us every Thursday for a new episode of Spy Talk, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, Andrew, the Biden White House did another one of those things where they said you can quit or you're fired. And I love it. The Biden White House has forced the resignation of a Trump-appointed member of a U.S. commission who has promoted the baseless claim that FBI planted agents among the pro-Trump mob stormed the Capitol and orchestrated the storming of the Capitol on January 6th.
The FBI secretly, you know, infiltrated Hydro's signal app. I'm really glad that you've hammered this home because, you know, as Congressman Krishnamurthy said on the show, the American public are the victims of an intentional effort to gaslight them about what actually happened on 1/6, and we have to continue to push back. So yes. Darren Beatty was named by the former guy to the U.S. Commission for the Preservation of America's Heritage Abroad in November of 2020. In a letter on Friday, Gautam Raghavan, the deputy director of the White House Office of Presidential Personnel, told Beatty that he must turn in his resignation by the end of the day Friday, and if he did not, his position would be terminated.
We like to fire people on Fridays because there's less drama.
Right.
I just see Bob and Bob. Like, Bob.
If you don't give me my stapler Bob. Back, I'm going to burn the building down.
And get this, Beatty confirmed the White House's letter in a Friday tweet, and she tweeted Friday afternoon saying his request for resignation was better than a Pulitzer, whatever that means. And Matt Gaetz replied, "You've been fired by better people than this." Yes, the same Matt Gaetz whose ex-girlfriend got an immunity deal to testify against him for sex trafficking minors and or a minor and obstructing justice. But yeah, sure, Matt, better people.
So way to work that in a dependent clause. I'm not sure to which to react first. Let's start with Beatty, right? He was serving a 3-year term and would have had the option of retaining his post until replaced. Members of the commission are not paid for their service. The White House move comes days after Beatty's actions as a right-wing blogger attracted attention from the House Select Committee investigating 1/6. The panel, as you might suspect, dismissed the, quote, unsupported claim that the FBI helped to incite the insurrection.
Yeah, he runs a right-wing website that in 2 separate posts claimed that Ray Epps, was hired by the FBI to agitate the pro-Trump mob. He's actually just a guy who he's a wedding planner in Arizona. Republican lawmakers opposed to the 1/6 investigation, including Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Three Names. Picked up the baseless theory, began running with it along with Tucker Carlson. They just ran with this theory, of course. And then we saw Ted Cruz spit it out in Congress. A bunch of stupid disinformation. God, what did.
If you weren't on our Patreon only hangout on Friday, you got to hear us discuss Ted Cruz supplicant at the feet of Tucker Carlson at some depth. All right. In addition to all that, check this out. Beatty's main role on the commission was to preserve monuments in Europe, including many that are honoring Holocaust victims. After he was fired from the Trump White House for attending a conference frequented by white nationalists.
So he's a Nazi working on Holocaust stuff.
Yeah, that's great. That is a crime in many European nations, right? Being a Holocaust denier, seriously, is a crime in Germany and elsewhere.
Yeah. Now, 6 other members appointed to the commission by Trump were also asked to resign. So it wasn't just Beatty. All 7, including Commissioner Chair Paul Packer, conservative activist Julie Strauss, New York Planning Commissioner Joseph Duick, and attorney Mark Levinson.
Yeah, so bye to all of those. And again, right, if you're listening, you got folks saying, "Oh, I don't understand what Biden is doing." Like, look, one of the things that is inarguable is Biden has a fire him first and let God sort it out, right? And God bless Papa Joe for that, right? That it is not, it has not deterred him when folks have said the president doesn't have the authority to fire me. He's been like, all right, well, you know,
sue me.
The U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia is right down the street there. So, and few have taken him up on that.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So bye-bye to them. Hello to new appointees to replace the 7 departing members, of whom I'm hoping a substantially fewer number are white nationalists. So,
yeah, that'd be nice.
We also have newbies coming in on the board for the International Food and Agricultural Development. Former New York City homicide prosecutor turned Emmy Award nominated TV host Star Jones was named chair of that commission, and others named include William H. Shaheen, husband of, as you might imagine, New Hampshire Senator Jane Shaheen, and Nancy K. Kaufman, the former CEO of the National Council of Jewish Women. She's probably not a Holocaust denier.
No, yeah, I think it's a good idea to put Jewish people on that commission.
Yeah, might be.
Instead of Nazis. All right, another cleanup news. What do you want to talk, Matt Gaetz, before we shift gears?
Oh, yeah, go ahead. Sure.
Yeah, because, you know, we were all assuming that she had been given an immunity deal, or that she had been, you know, that prosecutors put the screws to her and said, well, we're going to get you for obstruction, witness tampering, unless you help us out. And her lawyer, you know, smart lawyer, said, we'll testify for immunity in this. And they agreed. And that apparently that took months to get that deal sewn up. And that seems to me to be what's been kind of postponing the case, right? Making this go on longer than we thought it would. But her testimony is so key. They gave her immunity to an obstruction of justice charge, which is a serious offense.
Yep.
And
a serious offense that they would have had very little difficulty proving if, mm-hmm. you know, from everything we've been able to tell.
That's how important her, because she can testify to the age of this woman. As she was on that Bahamas trip. Now, at the time that the woman was 18, by the time they went to the Bahamas, but you still can't pay for sex across state lines.
Nope.
And so what I figure here is they need a credible witness to piggyback on Joel Greenberg, who can testify to the same thing, right? Because Joel Greenberg's a giant piece of shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And so here you have an ex-girlfriend who's got an immunity deal. And of course, they're going to come at her. Oh, did you get immunity for your testimony today? And it's like, yeah, that's they do it every single time. Here's the recording of the phone call that we were on. You know, there's going to be other testimony as well. And I think just a good, solid, credible witness to, because she was on that three-way call with Maddie Meatstick and the minor.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
And also she can. So what the reporting said was that two sources familiar said that she is testifying not just about the obstruction, because in that phone call, Matt and her called the former minor girl that was sex trafficked, or allegedly sex trafficked, to tell her to stop helping prosecutors. Don't tell anybody. You know, witness intimidation, witness, you know, tampering.
Yep.
Obstruction of justice. And so that's a pretty open and shut case if she testifies against him. And then also the sex trafficking.
Yeah. And all of these very, very serious felonies, we should need to say that. And I would add a couple of things, right? Number one, right, as a prosecutor, it is your job to evaluate the quality of the witnesses that you have and how you think their testimony will play at trial. And you need to build a case beyond a reasonable doubt, but you also need to make sure that you're not, right? I mean, it would be very easy in a case involving, you know, 30 potential co-defendants, for example, just to use a ridiculous hypothetical, right, to grant immunity to 29 of them and make an ironclad case against number 30. But if 20 of them are bad guys, right, like, you know, you have to balance how many folks do you let sort of walk scot-free in order to bulletproof your case. And here, you know, this is, again, use the lawyer weasel words, right? The journalist lawyer weasel words, use allegedly, use from everything we've heard in public sources. But from everything we've heard in public sources, this was allegedly a pretty serious player. On the other hand, you really want to secure a conviction against Gates. It is challenging for me, right? One of the things that you and I did each and every time somebody got an immunity deal in connection with the Mueller investigation was to ask, is there another reason for granting an immunity deal or a sweetheart plea deal here? And as I go through that process, other than locking up the testimony against Matt Gaetz, it is very difficult to see what other purpose this deal would serve.
Right. And not only that, but if I'm a prosecutor, I'm willing to give up one obstruction or obstruction of justice and witness tampering. Those are very serious crimes, but I'm willing to give that up to catch a sex trafficker.
Yep.
To be honest, to be straight. And, you know, and with the Joel Greenberg, they didn't give up his sex trafficking charge. They got rid of all the, you know, 26 other, like, wire fraud, computer fraud, identity. No, I think they left the identity theft, but you know, you don't give anybody a break on the sex trafficking charges. And
yeah.
and that carries, if I'm correct me if I'm wrong, that has a mandatory 10-year minimum sentence, I'm pretty sure.
Yet you are not wrong. the best kind of wrong.
Yeah, and you know, for a brief moment, I was like, should I be joking and laughing? And I'm like, yeah, I should, because that guy, seriously,
yeah,
deserves zero sympathy, zero empathy, and every minute in prison he's going to get, because I will put 100% beans on him being indicted, and in short order.
Yeah, and I think that ties up this segment really rather nicely. I love the fact that you began with pointing out how the negotiation, as far as we can tell from media reports, the negotiation of this took a long time. Apparently, if I were to infer, I would say, right, that is the ex-girlfriend saying, hey, I get a complete immunity or I walk, mm-hmm. right? And taking kind of multiple swings at it. And then finally, prosecutors coming back and going,
Also, you're a lawyer and you know this, and I've been through legal stuff and I know this. You submit a request and then you have 30 days to do, and then you have 14 days to respond. And then you have, you know, and so it's probably everybody just waiting until the last minute to, you know, trying to secure that immunity. And if I were that girl's lawyer, I would say no deal without immunity in everything. No deal. And I frankly love this. I mean, I normally don't like it when people get away with crimes, you know, but this one I love.
I can understand that, because I think we are collectively inferring as to where this is going. But
it's another young woman under the power of a powerful man. So it's like, you know, did she really? Or is he the mastermind here, really?
Yeah, although I shy away from anything that involves Matt Gaetz and mastermind in the same sentence.
But, I shouldn't put those two things together.
it does not stop him from being emotionally manipulative and abusive. The fact that, you know, I doubt he does the New York Times crossword puzzle every morning.
I was just going to say he struggles with Wordle every night. All right. In other cleanup news, Andrew, the director of national intelligence of Real Haines has appointed a new officer to oversee threats to elections, which is filling a critical role in the nation's efforts to counter gestures grandly. Foreign election interference.
The kind of thing in any sane country you would want both political parties to agree on.
But guess what? So,
not the one receiving the aid, shocker. Mm. So the new officer, Jeffrey Wickman, has worked at the CIA for more than three decades. He will take over as the election threats executive at the Office of DNI. Individual intelligence agencies like the NSA and U.S. Cyber Command have already begun stepping up their election threat monitoring ahead of this year's midterm elections. But without a new election threats executive, some on Capitol Hill had feared that progress had stalled and that coordination was diminished and that important analytical differences were being left unresolved. This really is the kind of thing where you need to share and coordinate intelligence.
Yeah, and that's the whole purpose of the DNI, right?
Yep.
Now, Wickman's appointment came after the ODNI, the Office of Director of National Intelligence, was forced to delay plans to create a foreign malign influence center that would oversee efforts from abroad to influence elections more generally, right? And creation of that center has been slowed by disagreements on Capitol Hill over the size of the effort and the funding, and I'll give you one guess as to which side doesn't want it to be big or well-funded.
Yeah. Shelby Pearson was appointed as the election threats executive in 2019 after working on security issues surrounding the 2018 midterm elections. But because a certain former president was rather sensitive to discussions about Russian interference in our elections, which, by the way, 100% documented proof by Republicans that they've signed on to check the Senate Intelligence Committee reports. But you couldn't say that around the former guy. So she quickly became marginalized.
Yeah, she was actually the one that briefed Congress on Russian interference in I think February of 2020, somewhere around there. And that pissed off the Donald so badly It ultimately led him to firing the DNI. Joseph McGuire might also had something to do with that whistleblower. And, you know, and then they blocked, he blocked Pearson from talking to Congress. You don't go in there anymore. That was her.
Yeah. So last year, Ms. Haynes and the director of national intelligence proposed that the way to work around that was to reallocate positions to create a small center of up to about 15 people. That would be without adding any new jobs. But then Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee objected to that and raised questions about whether you could shuffle those folks around and allocate the funds without congressional approval, which they could then do their best to stop.
Yeah, but you totally can. Just putting that out there.
Kind of seems like you can. That you know, there is an existing delegated mandate.
I've worked at government agencies, and if you want to shuffle around a couple of people and move departments, you do not need congressional appropriations approval to do that if you're not adding to the budget.
Yeah, and Congress has repeatedly delegated to various executive agencies, including DNI, the authority to investigate and stop foreign election threats. So, yeah, it doesn't seem like a great argument to me either.
Yeah. So bye-bye, Beatty. And
nice. Did you do this entire segment just for that?
No. Oh, okay. And welcome to Wickman. Hello and a bye-bye. And six other bye-byes from that commission. All going away. And that is the show. And you know what? I hope Maddie isn't sleeping well this week. And I'm super glad I drafted him for my fantasy indictment team this week.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I got him. I got Rudy and Tonzig into Geneva. They've been real quiet lately.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I you said they seized 16 cell phones from Rudy. Is this like a Better Call Saul? Does he like snap them in half every time he makes a phone call? I love it.
I would think it was funny, like, because we know they're burner phones, right? But wouldn't it even be funnier if he just didn't have credit to like get a Verizon account, and so he had to get Cricket burners, you know?
He's constantly like stopping in at the 7-Eleven and being like, "Can I have the one who not the one with 900 minutes? I don't need that much.
I need a phone and a card, please." Better get those calling cards now, because you know that's what you need to call people from jail.
Yep.
All right, that's it, and I'll be 48 the next time we talk. On cleanup on aisle 45, and who knows? Maybe we'll see an indictment.
Is there a better birthday present that the United States Department of Justice could get you in recognition of your years of service? I don't think so.
No,
so,
yeah, and you know what? Given that Mercury's in retrograde right now, I'm going to go ahead and say, watch the indictment happen tomorrow. Before the show drops on Wednesday.
Before the show drops, yeah, right?
So everybody, if he's been indicted, hell yeah, woohoo! Okay, if not, soon. There, we've set it up. All right, that's our show. I don't have any final thoughts unless you've got anything you want to add.
Nope, this has been great fun, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week. Bye-bye. Clean Up on Aisle 45 is written, researched, and produced by Allison Gill and Andrew Torres, with editing by Molly Hockey. Our art and logo designer by Joelle Reeder and Moxie Design Studios, and our music is composed and performed by Adam Orr. Clean Up on Aisle 45 is a proud member of the MSW Media Network, a collection of creator-owned podcasts dedicated to news, politics, and justice. For more information, visit mswmedia.com.
Season 4 of How We Win is here.
For the past 4 years, we've been making history in critical elections all over the country. And last year, we made history again by expanding our majority in the Senate, beating election-denying Republicans in crucial state House races, and fighting back a non-existent red wave.
But the MAGA Republicans who plotted and pardoned the attempted overthrow of our government now control the House, thanks to gerrymandered maps and repressive anti-voter laws. And the chaotic spectacle we've already seen shows us just how far they will go to seize power, dismantle our government, and take away our freedoms.
So, the official podcast of The Persistence is back with Season 4. There's so much more important work ahead of us to fight for equity, justice, and our very democracy itself. We'll take you behind the lines and inside the rooms where it happens with strategy and inspiration from progressive changemakers all over the country.
And we'll dig deep into the weekly news that matters most and what you can do about it with messaging and communications expert, co-founder of Way to Win, and our new co-host, Jennifer Fernandez Ancona.
So join Steve and I every Wednesday for your weekly dose of inspiration, action, and hope.
I'm Steve Pearson.
And I'm Jennifer Fernandez Ancona.
And this is How We Win.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. If approved, applications are typically funded the next business day or sooner. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit. Credit to the people.